find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Passing truth, no use sits within me. How deep would I go to find what I know about me? You don't know me like God does, like I do. I'm training myself to know how to sing, trust myself, believing everything that I know. I can keep up with my mind.
Welcome to Thresholds to Awakening with your host, Sway Emily Spilkin. Deep inside our greatest challenges live the seeds of our soul medicine. Illness, trauma, loss, and crisis, if we enter them completely, can be gateways to the full embodiment of who we really are. Now, here is Sway Spilkin.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Thresholds to Awakening, the show that helps you transform your deepest challenges into soul medicine. And I'm your host, Sway Spilkin. I am a body and soul-centered psychotherapist in Boulder, Colorado, specializing in helping people transform through the thresholds of their lives. And today I have the great honor of interviewing Elise Ballard. And Elise is an author, independent filmmaker, and the creator and personality of EpiphanyChannel.com. Elise wrote the book Epiphany, True Stories of Sudden Insight to Inspire, Encourage, and Transform, and created the website EpiphanyChannel.com as part of the Epiphany Project, a series of books, a web community, and a channel for people from all walks of life and from all over the world to experience, learn about, and share great epiphany stories. And some of the people who are included in her book and Epiphany Project include Deepak Chopra, Maya Angelou, Desmond Tutu, Craig Newmark, who's the founder of Craigslist, and Michael Beckwith, amongst others. Elise started her career in entertainment, working as an actress and then as a producer, and she's a regular contributor to Psychology Today and Positively Positive, and also has two TED Talks. Elise resides in LA and can be found on the web at www.epiphanychannel.com. Welcome to the show, Elise.
Thank you so much, Sway. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great. I'm really excited to have you on Thresholds to Awakening. And the show is really centered on supporting people in using challenges as opportunities to grow and taking full advantage of the threshold times in our lives, the times when the old ways fall away and the new ways haven't quite yet appeared. And I know that epiphanies are really one crucial way through which the new way, the new way appears. And it can really be a map. You know, epiphany can end up being a map for the rest of our lives. And so I would love for you to start off the show, you know, with the most basic question, which is, what is an epiphany?
Well, an epiphany by definition is a moment of sudden or great revelation. Mm-hmm. Now, because I ask everyone, like everyone in my book and in my project, I'm asking about people's greatest epiphanies. Mm-hmm. I ask everyone the same question, what is your greatest epiphany in life? What has been your greatest epiphany? So I define an epiphany when people ask me what it is as it's a moment of sudden or great revelation that usually changes your life in some way. And, you know, what's interesting about them is that, I mean, you probably have a definition of an epiphany. What would you say an epiphany is?
I would say it is a moment in time when the veils are thin between what we don't know and what we do know, and something comes through from what we don't know into the realm of the known, and that something that comes through is powerful and has the capacity to change our lives.
Great. See, and that is accurate, you know? And so I started asking everyone what their definitions of an epiphany were when I started interviewing people, and they were the most you know, beautiful and poetic forms of expressing what these moments are to people, just like yours was. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are in the book as well. And they're all, we all sort of have our own idea and interpretation of what that moment is, and they're all accurate. But by definition in the dictionary, and for my purposes to be, you know, so everyone's got something to work off of, that's what I say. It's a moment of sudden or great revelation that usually changes your life in some way.
Great. So I am often interested in the how, you know, how does magic actually occur? And so I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about what are the conditions that really make us available for epiphanies? And also, you know, are epiphanies something that everybody has? And if not, you know, why do some people have epiphanies and other people don't?
Well, you know, I interviewed people very, very young, all the way up to 93. Mm-hmm. And from all different backgrounds, you know, all different belief systems, from atheists to religious leaders and everyone in between, and, you know, all different careers and different socioeconomic backgrounds and beliefs and experiences, and everyone has epiphanies. Mm-hmm. Everyone is able to have epiphanies, and I believe we all have them, from the very, you know, little tiny inner self-perception kind of epiphanies to the huge, miraculous, earth-shattering kind. And everyone's different about how they get them, but we all are able to have them, and we all have them. I just think sometimes people gloss over them, or they don't think about some of these moments as an epiphany, mm-hmm. or we don't honor them, we don't recognize them, and we certainly a lot of times don't act on them, which will lead me into what you asked earlier, which were, you know, how do people have epiphanies? You know, I am not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or even a scientist. I'm a filmmaker who had an epiphany, and because it had changed my life so drastically, this one millisecond of a moment, I was able to change my life, that I was like, what, you know, I had what they talk about when they talk about someone having an epiphany. So I started asking people, you know, do you think you've ever had an epiphany? And people were so interesting that mm-hmm. I started interviewing them on camera. And so what happened is I've now done hundreds of interviews, again, with all these different kinds of people from all walks of life, from all over the world. And I found there are four things that happen when every single time someone has a life-changing epiphany. Now, because I was asking everyone about their greatest epiphanies in life, every single one of the epiphanies I got changed people's lives. Mm. Maybe 99.9%. Maybe there was, you know, 0.01% that they didn't. But for the most part, it changed everyone's lives. And the four things that happened every single time were, the people were listening. They were paying attention. They were open for whatever reason. Mm. Whether they might have been contemplating the sky, they could have been meditating or in prayer, or they could have been in absolute crisis, whether a loss of a job, an illness they were facing, or even the loss of a loved one. But whatever the case, everybody was open to these moments for whatever reason, and they were listening and paying attention to the world around them. The second thing that happened when anyone had a life-changing epiphany is that they had this element of belief. In the moment, they absolutely believed whatever happened to them was true for them. No matter what anyone else thought, no matter how crazy it might seem to other people or even to our own rational minds, they knew that it was true for them what had ever happened and what it meant to them. And then what happened after that is that every single person then took action. They took action. Again, by definition, an epiphany is a moment of sudden or great revelation. So you can have an epiphany, and you can even believe in it and believe it's true for you, but if you don't take action on it, then your life isn't going to change in any way. And I actually talked to people who had an epiphany by definition. They knew it, they believed it, but they didn't take action on it, so nothing had really changed in their lives. And but every person that I talk to that's in my book or that's on my website, their epiphanies changed their lives, and they all took action. When I say take action, usually it was the tiniest baby step towards what they felt compelled to do by that epiphany. So it could just be, you know, the most minute thing, like making a list. In my case, my epiphany that led me on this journey was to leave a marriage that wasn't working, and it hadn't been working for years. And I had this epiphany, and what I did for weeks was simply go on Craigslist and look for sublets, you know. That's all I did until finally I found one, and then I emailed that sublet, and then that led, and then, you know, and then I say once, so then the next thing that comes into play is called, I refer to it as serendipity. Could be coincidence, could be, you could call it synchronicity. You could call, some people don't believe in that. They think that it's just the world order, you know. However you want to talk about it, when you take that first step, no matter how big or small it might be, towards taking action towards your epiphany, what it compels you to do, what I refer to as serendipity comes into play, and the second step is revealed. And then the third step, and then the fourth step. And it's as if, as if the universe is conspiring to support you. And, you know, it's as if it's saying, yes, this is true for you. Yes, keep going. This is the right path. And I found that over and over and over again. And people would express it that way, that they couldn't believe. They went ahead and did, having no idea what the next step would be or what they were going to do. And then it was revealed to them in the most miraculous or magical ways, as you say. A lot of times. And so then you take action on that. And I always say be really grateful and excited when these kinds of things happen. And then more of it happens. And then we develop this. Now I talk about ways to develop ways of listening and paying attention and being open in life and developing ways to believe in yourself and to believe in the way life works so that you're more readily going to believe in your epiphanies. And then to take action in life, to practice taking action in life. And then, as I said, notice serendipity in your life. Notice amazing coincidences and be grateful and exciting for them and continue that loop. And we start having more and more epiphanies, and you find your life gets into much more of a flow when you do.
You know, I'm really appreciating your description of the four elements. And as you're talking, I'm realizing that all four of them kind of lead me to have this sense of, that the epiphany is a gift being offered to us, you know, from, depending on your worldview, it could be, you know, the divine, it could just be you, yourself, it could be, you know, it doesn't matter. But to me, it feels like this benevolent gift of like, here, actually, I want to support you. And here's this, you know, offering. And then our work on the other side of that gift is the listening, trusting ourselves, taking the first action, and following step by step what wants to unfold. But we don't have to know the whole picture. All we have to do is say yes to that first piece, that first gift that comes through.
Yes, and it's not easy, you know, at least not for someone like me. I'm not going to say it's always easy to take that step, but I can encourage people. You're so right, because I always call epiphanies a gift. Because of the nature of how they are, they're this instantaneous realization. People are like, what's the difference of an epiphany and a realization? And, you know, really, they're synonyms, you know? But, you know, there's some quality about these moments that is the instantaneous. You can have a realization, and it's not necessarily an instantaneous kind of, you know, awakening, so to speak. And, you know, there's a different quality to these moments that lend itself to being a gift, because when you don't believe in yourself or in life, which I was the prime example of this, because of the nature of the epiphany, it will give you that energy and that strength to take that step, to take that action. When before, you know, at least in my case and some other people's cases, we were paralyzed. We were stuck, you know. No matter, even if we'd had kind of the same epiphanies, you know, or kind of the same realizations, or kind of our inner voice was kind of, we kind of knew, or we felt, we knew we were miserable, but we just couldn't do anything about it. And the nature of these moments are such a gift because they will propel people into action when nothing else would, or give us the insight that nothing else was going to, you know? So I absolutely agree with you. They are this special kind of gift that no one is quite sure where exactly they come from, but I do. I completely concur with you on that.
And I love that statement that the universe is conspiring to support us. And I've actually used that often myself. And it reminds me of, I'm not going to be able to recall the poem, but there's a David White poem that, you know, kind of talks specifically about that, at the sense of everything, you know, the stairs in our house and the windowsill, and, you know, everything is conspiring to support us. And when we're brought to our knees, which is often because it's part of life, you know, by a big challenge in our life. So in your case, it was, you know, your marriage, and other people, it might be a loss. You know, we're both more in need and more available, I think, to that kind of conspiring support. And so it would make sense to me that in those moments, epiphanies are able to come through more. And I'm wondering if you could take a few minutes to tell us, so we can have more of a sense of you, a little bit of that moment in your own life.
The moment of the epiphany that started the project?
Yes. Yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
So I was an actress, and I was acting in a play. I was living in Austin, Texas at the time. And I happened to be playing a role in this wonderful play by Lawrence Wright, who's also in my book, about the Texas legislature. And I was playing a woman who is desperately in love with her husband, and she wants to have a baby. And he was one of the Texas legislators in the play. So she goes through, and they're not getting pregnant, and she goes through all this fertility testing, and she finds out that she's unable to have a baby. So she goes to her husband one night and tells him the news, and he feels so terrible, and he ends up telling her that he has had a one-night stand with a fellow legislator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all hell breaks loose, and you know, it's a play. And so the second to last scene of the play, I go to this other woman and I hand her an adoption brochure, because yes, she is also pregnant with my husband's baby. Mm-hmm. And the last scene of the play, they show us having adopted this baby, and everybody lives happily ever after. So for my role, I researched fertility treatments and adoption. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I didn't know anything about adoption. I didn't have any close friends that were adopted, and no one in my family's adopted. So I'd never knew much about it. And I had been in this marriage for 8 years, and we had been really unhappy for most of it. And no one in my whole family had ever been divorced, you know, for various and sundry reasons. You know, both of us were unhappy, but I just couldn't seem to extricate myself from the relationship. I was very stuck in life and felt paralyzed about what to do about it. And I did this role, and I did all this research about fertility and adoption. And I told the prop master that I would provide this adoption brochure to hand to this woman on stage that I was going to be doing. So I'd been using a piece of paper the whole rehearsals, and it was the night before dress rehearsal, and I'd found an adoption brochure, and I was printing it out. And I was literally standing at the printer with my backpack on. I was going to grab it off the printer and go get in my car and go to the theater. And I'm standing there watching this brochure print out towards me. Mm. And suddenly I just had this thought. And the thought was, I could do that. Mm. I don't have to stay. And in that millisecond, suddenly this fear that I had, that I was completely unaware of, was revealed to me and released from me in the exact same instant. And that was the fear that if I left this marriage, I might never have a biological child of my own. I had no idea that that was really what was terrifying me so much. And I was so amazed by this. And when I say this fear snapped from me, or was released from me, it literally felt like 60 pounds lifted off my body. It was the strangest thing. It was a weight I'd been carrying around that I wasn't even aware I'd been carrying around. I mean, my performance was different that night even. I mean, everyone was like, what happened? And, you know, I realized that that was really what was keeping me there. And because of the research I had done for this role and then playing this role where a woman adopted a baby, I realized that there was a myriad of ways that I could become a parent if I wanted to become a parent, mm-hmm. you know, if I needed to. And that was no reason to be staying in something that wasn't making either one of us happy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was able to finally, as I said, it was very hard and it wasn't an easy road doing it. Even when we got separated in the divorce, and that's a whole other story, but mm-hmm. but that moment is what got me to finally take action. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, serendipity happened. The one place I emailed, I got as a sublet, and then that's a whole other story that's happening. And, you know, and it just one thing happened after another, and I always say that, you know, now this is a little bit more to do with being in a situation of a divorce or starting over in life or whatever, when you feel paralyzed in life, but when you can take one action a day, even if it's tiny, like looking at Craigslist or making a phone call or writing a list down, I found that if I did one thing a day and then I got a little stronger, and then I could do two things a day, and then three, and then pretty soon you're walking again, and then you're running. You realize you're getting a lot done, and your energy is back. Mm-hmm. But that's how I did it. But that was the moment, and about 2 months after that moment, I woke up in the sublet that I'd gotten, and it was a sublet, which means, you know, you basically move in with your clothes, like. Everyone, the stuff is all around you is the person mm-hmm. you're subletting from. And I looked around, nothing around me was mine. I was mm-hmm. single for the first time. You know, I'd been with him for a decade. I'd been mm-hmm. with the guy over a quarter of my life, you know. And all of a sudden I was single, living alone in a stranger's house, basically. And I looked around and I went, how did I get here? What? And all of a sudden my mind flashed back to that instant at the printer. And that's when I said, you know, I had an epiphany. That is what they talk about when they talk about someone having an epiphany. And so that's when I started asking people, you know, friends and colleagues if they'd ever had an epiphany. And people were so interesting that when I was doing my work as a filmmaker, which I do these guerrilla kind of documentary type filmmaking where I interview people, I started just asking on the fly, you know, what do you think your greatest epiphany in life has been? Mm. And people are so interesting when they talk about it. And more than that, even for me, was that not only was it entertaining, but I started realizing that I was utilizing what they were sharing with me in my life. I found that our epiphanies contain some of our greatest wisdom in life.
Yes.
And that, and I think you asked me this, maybe not now, but in a pre-interview, that about the most successful people. And I'll tell you, the most successful people know this. Mm-hmm. That I found the most successful people I've interviewed in terms of worldly prestige and such is that they honored these moments, these stories. They knew exactly what happened. They had carried these stories with them always and used them as a building block on their in their lives. Mm. And that's what I encourage people to do is to, that's a whole other ball of wax right now. That wasn't what you asked me. But anyway,
that's
the deal. That's what happened and why it led me. And then, do you see? So now I say that this project is my greatest epiphany in life. And, but that moment that had me leave the marriage, which is that's its own story, I kept saying yes. When you know, I asked somebody about their epiphany and they were interesting and I started utilizing what they said in my life. It was helping me. And I mentioned it to one person I mentioned it to that happened to have a production company out here. But he was just like, oh yeah, I think that'd be a great idea. And you could, spin them out, the best ones, into a book. And I was like, oh yeah. Then that one person was like, you know what? We need a reality show here. Can you come develop this with us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just, so what I'm saying is that that's the serendipity, you see? And then I just kept following that. I'd never written anything, and now I've written a book with Random House, and now mm-hmm. I'm on this whole other journey. If you ever taught, I would be speaking at TED, or be speaking to you, or be like this accidental expert on epiphanies, you know? Several years ago, I would have thought you were crazy.
Mm.
So anyway, that's just the one story, but yeah, that's what happened.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I can feel your inspiration, which I know is really one of the qualities that, you know, kind of comes along with epiphanies, is that sense of there's an energy, there's a quickening, you know, the life force, the aliveness that comes through. And when you were talking about the most successful people, you know, the world leaders who you interviewed, you know, what they all had in common in relationship to their epiphanies is that they honored them. There's a sense of, you know, dignity, I think, that comes with that, a sense of, okay, I trust that this, that my life is important enough to honor, you know, what kind of biblically is called this, you know, the still small voice within, right? Is to honor this moment that I trust that what's coming through is important enough and that I am worth it. That even if there are louder voices outside of me that are telling me to do something else, I have no choice but to listen within. And it's that bravery, that courage to listen within and honor your dignity that seems like really makes the difference between changing your life or not.
Yeah, you know, and I think that these moments of epiphany, and some people are like, you know, I don't think I've ever had one. And then later they'll come back to me and have the most profound stories where we're both crying. Two people in the book were Tracy Hafen and, Julie Horton that I remember specifically off the top of my head that had said that with the, you know, and I started realizing that how important these stories were. And then when they had found and remembered and honored them, what it was for them as well, you know? So that's why, exactly, I encourage people to really think about these moments and to write them down, to really put them in story form. And I always ask, you know, what happened, what led up to the epiphany, what happened in that moment, and what happened afterwards? Did your life change, and if so, how? And then what was the wisdom gained? You know, what was the lesson learned? You can usually summarize it in one or two sentences. And that's how I title each story in the book, as you know, because, again, we all have such different experiences and different stories, yet you can always boil the essence of what you got out of it into a universal truth, usually, that we can all relate to. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It kind of celebrates the whole thing about how we're also very, very different and unique and yet also the same. You know, you don't have to feel alone. And we can learn from each other and not have to go through it ourselves. You know, we can actually, so that's another reason. But some of these epiphanies contain our greatest wisdom. And if you knew what they were, if you were always honoring it and looking at it as your own tool of inspiration, your own private tool of inspiration and wisdom and building block, it's amazing. And literally every single solitary, you know, famous person, let's say Clive Davis, Maya Angelou, Desmond Tutu, Dr. Oz, Diane Warren, Cory Booker, they all knew exactly what their greatest epiphany in life was immediately when I asked them.
I love that. You know, a piece of my work is about supporting people and coming into contact with what I call their soul story, you know, really knowing who they are and what they're here on the planet to do. And it strikes me that, you know, I hadn't thought of it in terms of epiphanies, but as you're talking, it's the same thing. It's like, oh, of course. You know, one of the ways in which our soul story are the ways in which we reveal ourselves to ourselves or, you know, really come into contact with mission or what's really our purpose is through epiphanies. So it's really inspiring to hear you talk about it in that way. And as I was reading the book, one of the stories that really jumped out at me was, and I can just imagine, by the way, that, you know, most people who read this book or, you know, watch the interviews have certain stories that really resonate with them because they are universal truths and that they're kind of contagious, that epiphanies are contagious, that as we hear somebody else's epiphany, we start to track and pay attention to, oh, right, and what's mine? What's my soul story? What's that moment like in my life? And for me, reading the book, Esther Perez's story, she's a well-known, as you know, I'm explaining it to our listeners, but she's a well-known sex therapist and author and also a child.
Esther Perel,
Perel, excuse me, right. And also a child of Holocaust survivors. And She states in her interview, in my community in Belgium where I grew up, we had an enormous number of survivors living there. Among them, there were two kinds of people, those who didn't die and those who came back to life, those who were just living and those who were really alive. And so for me, you know, that just resonates so much with this, you know, with the work that I'm up to in the world and this distinction between surviving and really living, you know, sparks something in me. And it's also just so relevant to kind of where I am in my life right now. And so as I was reading that, I was thinking, wow, there must be, you know, at least one of these in the book for everybody that, kind of flips their switch, you know, the epiphany story in the book that goes, oh yeah, this resonates with me. And so I guess I'm wondering for you kind of two questions. One is, do you find that epiphanies are contagious? And two, what are the stories in the book that for you personally kind of flip your switch in that way?
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, you're absolutely right. You know, I started interviewing people formally in, I guess it was the end of 08. Is that right? Yeah, I started interviewing people formally at the end of 08. So it's been several years that I've lived with these epiphanies, you know? And I get new ones all the time. So what's really interesting is that they absolutely are, I love that word, contagious. Mm-hmm. Someone else's epiphany will cause you to have an epiphany of your own. Or like I said before, you'll glean wisdom that you absolutely can apply to your own life. Since I've been living with these several years, what I found is in the moment it might affect me and like certain ones meant a great deal to me in certain moments in my life. And then, you know, I moved on and then I was at a different place in my life and then different ones meant more to me than the other ones. And then I found myself revisiting ones because of things that are happening and I see them in a whole new way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's so interesting to me how these are, they're very fluid. They continue to grow in depth and breadth for me. And I'm the one that's been living with them the longest. So other people that have been now that have had the book for a while or have talked to me about their own epiphanies, it's grown for them too. So I'm seeing that they're not only contagious, but they actually grow and they actually will deepen in meaning for you. It's fascinating. Mm. You'll remember stuff that you didn't necessarily remember before about your own, or you'll read or you'll realize that someone else's epiphany could, you know, oh, that's what he meant by that. And when you find yourself in someone else's life. So they're very sort of magical and living that way. They'll move with you where you are in life. So that's absolutely accurate, at least in my experience. And for me, I didn't even get to put all the ones I wanted to in this book. So hopefully in the next book, I will be putting those in the next book. But every one of these in the book, and there are 59 in the book, mean something to me, helped me, changed me in some way, most definitely. So the ones that mean something to me recently, I would say, I think ones and when I was writing it that meant a lot to me, I was about to write about Kristen Neff's. Mm-hmm. Kristen Neff's is about self-compassion. Yeah. That was a huge one for me. I had the epiphany right when I was filming her, actually. A lot of these epiphanies I also filmed, and they're on my website. And I was filming her, and she said, hers is about self-compassion, and she went to a Buddhist meditation. She was going through a divorce, too, and she went to a Buddhist retreat, and the woman said, you know, if you can't have compassion for yourself, you can't have compassion for anyone else, not really. Mm-hmm. And Kristen said, she went, you know, I don't speak half as harshly to my friends as I speak to myself. What am I doing? You know, and when she said that, it hit me, and I went, what? That made sense to me. Yeah. I started realizing and hearing the horrible, hateful self-talk that I was saying to myself. It was the first time I really realized it. I'm not kidding. And so that's been a work in progress for me about, I catch myself now being really mean to myself, you know, really mean. I'm probably the meanest person to me than anyone else, you know. And so that was a big one for me, and I've come a long way because of that one. Maya Angelou's meant a lot to me.
Yes.
Her voice was so amazing. I interviewed her on the phone, but we are loved by love itself. There is nothing good that we can't do. You know, sometimes I think hers is a really interesting one because it was a personal one that meant for her. But when I look out into the, and I take it on personally for me too, I happen to believe in the divine. So for me, I'd never really examined what that meant to be loved by the divine. I don't know why. I it's kind of shallow or childish or immature. In some ways, when I thought about that relationship, so that was a big shift for me on a level. And the other thing about it was is that there is nothing good that we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I look around at the world and I'm just like, how are we ever going to fix this? You know, I just get so overwhelmed sometimes by what it's like. Anything good that you do, it's like sticking a tiny pin in a huge dam with a million holes in it. You know, that saying, I'll start spiraling down, or if I get paralyzed in life again, sometimes I go to that. And I think about that, and it's like there is, and you think about the stuff, there is nothing good we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we turned stuff around? How many times have human beings, you know, picked it up and like, just, you know, one example, September 11th, you know, we rebuild, we're like ants, we come back, we are resilient. Esther Perel, you brought hers up. People survived the Holocaust, and not only did they survive, but they lived and they thrived. You know, how did they do that? You know, we are resilient, and you know, there are so many people go through so many challenges, you know, illnesses and disabilities, and I've got people in my book like that, and death and all the atrocities that go on, but there is nothing good that we can't do. And I've never heard it expressed that way before, you know? So anyway, that was a big one for me, and one's about faith. Were really big for me. You know, as I mentioned before, I didn't have much faith really in the way life worked or in myself. And when people had such faith in their lives and in their epiphanies and in themselves, they were such an example for me. And then they had faith in me because they would give me I realized they were all sharing their epiphanies with me, very personal stories. At the time, I didn't even have a website or a book deal. And these are like, some people were like very busy and famous. We're all so busy these days. Some people were, you know, like Dr. Oz and Elizabeth Avalon and Cory Booker and Rabbi Shmuley, and he's, you know, and they didn't even know me, some of these people. Anyway, so that kind of faith really inspired me. And then I have a section in the book called The Callings, and it's all about people finding their callings and careers through epiphanies. And that whole section has really, really helped me, because this is a whole new career for me, writing and all of this. And so that one has just been really, really fascinating and very helpful. And I would say that one is a big section for me that I call upon recently, actually.
So. You know, I'm feeling the juice and the kind of personal engagement and aliveness with the material, the contagiousness of the epiphanies as you're talking. And when you were talking about the Maya Angelou's, you know, that was one that stood out to me as well. I'm just going to say it again so people have it, you know, fresh in their head, which is, you know, we are loved by love itself. There's nothing good that we can't do. And what stood out for me about that is, you know, it might have been an ordinary thought at first, right? You know, she came to it because a teacher of hers had her read the lines out loud, God loves me, several times, right? God loves me, God loves me. And as she read it out, something shifted, and they shifted from being just words to somehow true and alive in that moment. And it strikes me that the difference between, you know, kind of what we know cognitively and an epiphany is that sense of bodily, unshakable knowing of truth, right? The sense of, oh, this is actually true. These aren't just words. And Michael Beckwith has a, you know, similar one in the book. And it seems to me that those moments, you know, when epiphanies, when we shift from cognitive knowing to bodily unshakable truth, that then we're coming into union with the divine. You know, in those moments, then we're shifting from a thought process to actual intimate connection with the larger truth that is. And I'm wondering, for me, that feels like a real basis for epiphanies themselves. And do you find that that's kind of a common characteristic?
Some people wouldn't define it that way for them because they don't have a belief in the divine.
Uh-huh.
But, cause I interview, you know, it's not, everyone has epiphanies, you know. But you know, to that point is that every single person I have talked to that talks about their epiphanies has reverence for these moments. Mm-hmm. And yes, I would say that there is something bodily that happens. There is this knowing. No one can quite explain it. And there is reverence, total reverence for these moments, no matter who you are, no matter what your belief systems are. It's a really beautiful thing. And they can't, you know, I talk about it as being, you know, one of those things of the mystery of life, you know, because, you know, they can't. They have lab research and scientific, you know, research on people having epiphanies, like problem-solving epiphanies, you know, so they can measure what goes on in the brain, et cetera. But you cannot in a lab create a life-changing epiphany for people. We cannot force these moments to happen. We can't measure what's going on when someone has a life-changing epiphany, because there is this element of mystery to them, and everyone has reverence for them. And I think it's because there is that feeling that you're talking about, no matter what their belief systems are, that happens, you know.
I kind of, the mystic in me really likes that you can't measure it. You know, there's something.
I know.
There's something magical about that, and it helps. I don't know. For me, there's a way that it. I don't know. I think there's a scientific part of my brain, and there's a mystical part of my brain, and the mystical part of me likes that it can't be measured, because in some ways that helps me open and trust it more. It means that I'm not in control.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I call it it's part of that mystery or magic of life, you know, and I think those kinds of things we like. It keeps us alive. It's fun. It's the magic of being here, isn't it? It's just one of those things that's magical, but we all have them and we all have access to them. And that's why I talk about people really honoring them and trying to get in touch with them and really knowing your story, because it's just one of our stories, right? But it does contain such a great wisdom, and usually they're very positive, beautiful stories that we're the hero in.
Yes.
You know, I talk about them as being like, we talk about Joseph Campbell's The Journey of the Hero, and it's sort of the, you know, the epiphany is the call to the adventure, and then the journey is the taking of action on it, and then you come back. The hero's journey is not complete until he comes back to the community and shares his story, so the community can then take it and use it, you know, as a myth or as their story to spread and use in their lives. And that's what I think epiphanies can be, you know. Mm. It's our own little hero's journey that we can all have and hopefully share. But if you don't want to share it, ask other people in your lives what theirs are, because you'll learn from them. But just have it as your own tool, you know.
Yeah. You know, another framework that I saw in your book for epiphanies was, for some people, it was really a reframe. You know, there was a sense of, how I thought the world was before is not actually how it is. And you have, a healing epiphany story in your book with the English singer-songwriter Billy Myers, where she was, you know, she was in foster care as a child, and she felt, you know, had a lot of abandonment from that, and ended up in a healing retreat center. And as part of her healing experience, was asked to write a letter from the perspective of her parents, who ended up, you know, giving her up into the foster system, to the little girl of her. And as she switched seats and wrote that letter, she began to have a kind of empathy or understanding for her parents' experience and started to understand, oh, maybe it wasn't personal. And then even went to her father and asked him about his experience. And he revealed something to her, which really surprised her, which was a sense of, brought you into foster care and into this particular family because I really thought it was going to be the best thing for you. And she was able to hear that in that moment. And that changed her world because there was this kind of flip from the world isn't against me, but it's really for me. And what if I've been looking at it the wrong way? And I'm wondering, is that kind of a common thread or theme that you see in the Epiphany stories?
Well, it's one of them. It's one of the themes. I would say, it definitely is one of the themes. You know, there's a section of awakenings and new directions and healings, comings of age, and callings, and is that it? Six of them. I hope I said them all. So that is definitely one of them. I mean, sometimes people will just completely do something completely they'd never thought of before. You know what I mean? So it's not the same for everyone, but that is definitely one of the themes where suddenly you see things differently. You go in a new direction, you have an awakening, or you get a healing from an awakening, you know? I always say we divided the book into six sections just for the ease of the reader, but really epiphanies don't really have categories, but if you were going to categorize them, they could be most of them, if not all of them, could be in more than one category, if not all the categories, you know? I say this project has now been my greatest epiphany in life because I realized when I was writing my acknowledgments, I realized that it had been all those things to me, an awakening, a healing, a new direction, a coming of age, and a calling, and a miracle. In the
miracle.
The other section is the miracles, yeah. So it's all of those things. I would say if you want to boil the epiphanies down to every single one of them, all of them, my belief is all of them boil down to a form of love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's usually a love of self, a love of others, a love of your work or your calling, a love of the community at large. You know, it's always going to boil down to love. And then also they always seem to boil down to the very essence of that person. You know, like, or to the path, so to speak. I do think they're huge, huge callings to get us on our own particular path. In whatever form that is. Like, let's talk about, like, Dr. Oz. You know, his is in the New Directions section. And he was already a doctor. He was, you know, an ER doctor, he's the head resident for the emergency room as a cardiologist, but still, he dealt with a family who were Jehovah's Witnesses, and their mother was bleeding to death, and he operated on her and said, okay, we have to give her blood now, and they were like, we're not going to do that. And he goes, what are you talking about? And was, you know, that was their beliefs, that was their religious beliefs, to not give her blood. And he just could not believe it. He was furious. And, you know, he's like, I did all this work and you're not going to let us save her and all this. And then later he realized that in their minds, they were doing the best thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
That in their minds, that was more loving, as hard as it was for them.
Yeah.
And whether he agreed with it or not, which he, you know, he didn't, but he realized that what was important for him as a doctor was to start seeing things from a world perspective, to really listen. Again, we come back to this listening motif, you know, and to listen to other people. And he started listening to his patients and what was important to them and how they were experiencing the world and how he could help them heal themselves. He said, because really that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so he said, really, a doctor is a teacher, you know. So that's what led him to putting in the complementary alternative medicine wing at Columbia. And now, you know, now he's doing what he's doing on television and everything else because it led him on a new path of being open to other ways of healing and teaching, you know. And so it was the same thing. It was just a completely different direction and lead you on this random path, you know? Everyone, every single person, if you read them, you'll see that the epiphanies kind of bring them onto the people that founded Operation Smile, the McGees. You know, they were a doctor and a nurse. They went on a volunteer thing to help people with cleft palates in another country, and they couldn't even begin to help the problem, and they were so traumatized that they couldn't finish helping everybody there that they went back and did it themselves, and now they have this operation in hundreds of countries.
You know,
and they just never could foresee it. So, you know, those are more dramatic cases, but, you know, it on and on if you read it. So I think that epiphanies are really important because they really get you grounded in what your path is or what you're doing here or what your purpose is. And again, they boil down to love, some kind of love if you really look at them.
And it feels like, again, coming back to that generosity piece or that gift piece from the universe, it feels like love, you know, gently chinking our armor, you know, love taking any opportunity it has to come through the cracks and say, wait a minute, listen, there's another perspective here. Wait a minute, you know, this isn't your only option. Wait a minute, actually, miracles are possible. Actually, God loves you. You know, whatever it is for that individual, it's love coming through and taking that opportunity to gently kind of, or sometimes not so gently, shake us out of the ways of being that are limiting our capacity for love in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Moving.
Exactly, yeah. That's one way to express it.
You know, we only have about, I'd say about 3 more minutes here or 4, and I'd love to give you an opportunity at least to let our listeners know, A, how they can get involved, B, what else you're working on so people can really find you.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, I'm working on another book for Epiphany, and I'm also writing a fictional memoir that I'm trying to finish right now. And we're pitching the reality shows for Epiphany that I originally started with, but now I know what they would be better. So I'm working on things like that and the documentary. But you can go to epiphanychannel.com and, you know, watch the videos and sign up for our mailing list. We're also on Facebook, Epiphany Channel, on Facebook and Twitter, which is how we met.
Yes.
Or you can find me, Elise Ballard, and you can buy the book on the website if you wanted to find the book, but I don't have my set. And there's a class that I taught too that goes into all this much more in depth, and that is on my website as well. It's like, you know, downloadable MP3s.
Right.
And if you have any questions or you want to share your epiphany, we completely encourage that and would love for you to on the website. You'll see at the top right it says share your epiphany, and there's a form you can leave it for. You can share it on Facebook. Or you can share in 140 characters on Twitter. So that's really where you find me, at epiphanychannel.com, and there's a YouTube channel where you can go watch all the videos. We have, like, I don't know, 50 videos. I went to the Nobel Prizes, so that's on there. We interviewed some of the Nobel people, and it just keeps going. So hopefully we'll have some new stuff out very soon, but I will let you know. But right now, that's the stuff I have on the website and around.
That's great. And if people do share their stories, you know, via Facebook, is it kind of just a forum to really keep that epiphany inspiration going, or are you also kind of collecting stories for your next project?
Yeah, I've been collecting them, and some of them we put on the blog, and some of them are just for people to be able to share them. And you know, I can't guarantee they'll be in another book, but I definitely have them collecting, you know, in case I get to do that too. I interview people usually, but we're thinking about also putting in some that people write, or I'll follow up calling them. I haven't exactly figured that out, but I don't want it to make people shy about sharing them, you know? But yeah, you can share them there for inspiration. Also, I just think it's good to share these things, if not with others, with your loved ones, and ask your loved ones about their epiphanies. You will not believe the insight and the wisdom and the intimacy that's established. You will learn stuff about people that you did not know before. And I really encourage that, to ask people in your circle. You know, oh, I heard about this thing. What do you think your greatest epiphany has been? Just wait. It's amazing. And then if you share your epiphany, so that's, we're getting more wisdom. You know, it's all about kind of building a community around, you know, sharing our wisdom and what's working for us and our stories, getting our stories out there for ourselves and for others.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you. I so appreciate your sharing your enthusiasm and passion and for helping, you know, this mission of helping to raise consciousness around epiphanies so we can have more and more of them and really listen to what's wanting to come through. So thank you so much for
joining us. Oh, thank you so much for having me on. You were wonderful.
Oh, thank you. And I also just want our listeners to know, again, your website, which is epiphanychannel.com. And you can also find me on the web at thresholdshealing.com and the Thresholds to Awakening radio fan page on Facebook. And you can sign up for my newsletter and also just stay in touch with us by liking the page on Facebook. And I also want to send a special thank you to Shyla Ray Sunshine for donating our opening theme music. And thanks to everyone for listening in, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you again for joining us this week. Thresholds to Awakening can be heard live every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Please join Sway Emily Spilkin then, and have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the 7th Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit 7thwavenetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.